Hello, it's Michael Steed here from Kaplan Financial. And in this podcast, I'd like to take a look at some tax strategies for high earners. Now, this is potentially a huge area, and I'm going to be a bit selective here. What I'm not going to be talking about in this podcast is the use of trusts. Now, that is obviously a very useful area for HNWs to get involved in, and their families, of course. But I have dealt with that in a podcast fairly recently, and I will be returning to that later this year. So just to be clear about that, we're not going to be talking about trusts. So when we talk about tax tips for high net worths, what are the areas of concern? Well, obviously, there are two that spring to mind here, the progressive loss of the personal allowance above £100,000. And of course, that's completely lost when their net relevant income is twice the personal allowance above 100,000, so just below 113,000. And of course, the second area of concern is the 50% income tax rates for people with taxable income over 150,000. And of course, they have long lost their personal allowance, so they're going to be the people who are going to be looking at ways to reduce their tax bill. Now, one of the big gains here is to convert income into capital, and we will be looking at ways to do that during the course of this podcast, because clearly if you're taxed at 50% on income and the highest current rate of capital gains tax is 28%, then by converting income into gains, there's a clear saving of 22%, and we will be coming back to that in just a second. But before we do that, of course, there are some pretty basic tricks that we should always make sure that we've ticked off. For example, if you're married or you are in a civil partnership, you may want to give some of your income-producing assets to a non-working partner or spouse to make sure that we've used their personal allowance and their basic rate bands. And that could be worth £10,000 easily and more if you are paying tax at the additional rate of 50%. So that's a first and obvious trick there. But there are one or two other tricks which I rather like. The first is investing in property, and the second is investing in business. So let's take those two next. Investing in property, I think I'm looking for plans here which are capital appreciation plans. An obvious one that springs to mind, and one that I've looked at quite recently, is the purchase of business premises, which are then converted into flats. Now, a basic point here, you want to avoid using company structures for these. We're talking about the use of individuals here, because obviously companies are under a different regime. So just to be clear, we're talking about people buying properties individually. I have a bit of a holy horror about buying properties in companies, generally to be avoided for all the obvious reasons. And we've dealt with that in other podcasts. So, investing in property. Imagine, if you would, that you've bought some business premises, you're going to convert them into flats. Lots of possibilities here. Not the least of which, of course, is that there are some 100% capital allowances available for the conversion of commercial property into flats. And the other angle of that is that you are in a position then to dispose of your flats in bits, so that you could sell one flat this year, one flat next year, and so on and so forth. And what I like about that, especially if you've got a spouse or a civil partner involved, is that you're going to get each year £20,000, just above £20,000 on current numbers, tax-free, because you've then got the use of two annual exemptions for CGT purposes. So investing in property, looking for capital structures, has got to be a good thing. Now, we could spend the next hour talking about that, but in this short podcast, I just want to sort of lay the basic framework on the table. Okay, that's investing in property. But what about investing in business? Well, there are some angles here that I'd just like to put on the table as well. You could, of course, invest in your own business. Because the nice thing about that is that when you come to sell, you're going to be eligible, assuming you're eligible and you meet the conditions for entrepreneur's relief. And we saw in the emergency budget in June 2010, the raising of the limit from 2 million to 5 million. That's the lifetime limit, and that's got to be worth knowing about. The other angle on that, of course, is getting other family members involved. Maybe if you're in your 40s, your children are beginning to sort of come into their majority, could it be that we get their names on the company as well? They become shareholders in the company. And I think very careful tax planning requires that you consider that quite early on and get your children involved. And I have no problems with that at all. You need to be, of course, careful about the gifting provisions. But that aside, there is potential for keeping it in the family. And I always look at that where possible. If you're going to invest in somebody else's business, don't forget that there are tax reliefs available through the Enterprise Investment System. And this comes out of Part 5 of the Income Tax Act 2007. The income tax relief that you get under the Enterprise Investment Scheme, the EIS, is an upfront tax relief of 20% when you subscribe for shares in a company and the shares and the company meet the requirements of the legislation. Now, there's quite a bit of detail here, but effectively, the subscription's got to be in cash and it's got to be fully paid up, and the company must be trading. There's a normal problem here that if you're going for the noughties, that is things like investing in property and financial services, then that will not qualify under the EIS. Another area of investment that can be quite tax effective is, of course, farms and woodland. As far as farms are concerned, purchase of the farm, there are a whole lot of tax issues there, like the principal private residence relief, whether it's actually a proper farmhouse, relief for expenses on the house. There's a whole range of issues in there. I suppose the most obvious one that comes to the surface is whether it's actually a proper farm. And it's sometimes necessary to remind clients that if they're effectively hobby farmers, then there's going to be restriction on the relief of losses under the 5-year rule. So the question simply is it a proper farm? If it's a hobby farm, we're going to sooner or later run into trouble on getting sideways loss relief. But the other one that I think sometimes appeals to high net worths for a whole raft of reasons is actually investment in woodlands. Now, when you invest in woodlands, there are two bits here that you need to be aware of. The first is investing in woods or woodland, but there's a distinction made between that and investing in short rotation coppice. And that's a lovely phrase. I've got some short rotation coppice on my farm. Effectively what it is, you're growing hazel or willow or other fairly hardwoods, traditional English species, and you sort of cut them down anything between 7 and 10 years on a regular basis, sometimes up to 20, depending upon the use of it. The more modern use, of course, is biomass. But here's the point, that short rotation coppice is regarded as farming, and you will be under the normal farming rules for that. Whereas woodlands, there is no income tax charged on profits from, I love this phrase, the commercial occupation of woodlands in the UK. So if you are investing in woodlands and you are cutting trees and selling them and so on and so forth, basically there is no relief for any of the expenses, for example, in the initial planting. But as and when the profits do arise, and remember trees is very much a long-term business, then that is going to be exempt from tax. And I've certainly done a little bit of advice in the past on the purchase of woodland, and I think it's a nice investment in some ways, quite apart from the exempt from tax bit, that it's actually a very pleasant investment and people get a lot of personal pleasure out of woodland. Incidentally, I got for Christmas a wonderful book of poetry by Felix Dennis, who's a great publisher, but also a great tree man. So if you're into trees, thoroughly recommended. Okay, so that's the basic shape on farms and woodlands. But what I like to do now is just go and have a quick look at some CGT tips. Okay, so what have we got in the way of CGT tips? We've already mentioned using your allowances, the 10,100 in the current tax year, which of course to a higher rate taxpayer is worth 28%, just over £2,800. So that's got to be worth looking at. The other standard trick, of course, is to look through your portfolio, and quite useful if you've got shares, to see if you've got any losses that you could crystallise. So if you're actually facing a bill on the sale of shares, which is going to give you a taxable gain, then also have a look through your portfolio to see whether you've got any losses which you might want to crystallise. And if they're shares, you might want to sort of sell them, but still retain them on the hope of future benefit. And then you're going to be into the classic bed and breakfasting. But remember, the rules are that you'd have to let go of them for a whole 30 days before you could buy them back. And whether you choose to buy them back, of course, is your choice. But the point here is that crystallising a loss is sometimes useful for offsetting against a gain in that tax year. We've already mentioned in the context of flats of actually spilling your gains over 2 or 3 years. You want to be careful here. I advised recently on a scheme by which somebody sold a business and they got 3 tranches of money over 3 tax years. But the trick here is making sure that they are all separate gains for separate items. And this was a publishing business where they had some intellectual property held personally, even though they operated through a company. And I had to structure it so that the buyers actually bought parts of the business, the rights to the intellectual property in the publishing business, but to do them bit by bit. And the caution here, of course, is that you want to make sure that you avoid at all costs making a single offer, which is just paid for over more than one tax year. That's just deferred consideration. And of course, the basic TCGA rule, that's in the Taxation of Chargeable Gains Act, is that it will be crystallised as a gain right back at the beginning when the deed is done. And the fact that you've got your money over 2 or 3 tax years, it counts for nothing. The gain is chargeable in the first tax year. So clearly you do need to be fairly cautious about that. Don't forget too, an ISA. ISAs are tax-free for both income and gains. And although they've been pretty poor on the rates of return over the last 2 or 3 years, actually having shares, for example, or other assets within an ISA wrapper is actually potentially quite good. I mean, stocks and shares ISAs have done quite well over the last 2 or 3 years as the stock exchange has bounced back after the financial crisis in 2008. Look, for example, at the way that BP shares after the Deepwater Horizon event and Barclays shares after the collapse in 2009, how they've bounced back. You would have made a lot of money indeed on that, and it would be much better to try and get those into ISAs. But I do think that needs some specialist advice, and certainly it's not one that I'm qualified to give beyond looking at the tax implications of that. There are other angles too. If you are married, and indeed in a civil partnership, then you can actually generate capital gains, and hopefully within your annual exemption, without disposing of the underlying asset. And the way that this happens is for one partner to sell an asset which generates a gain, and the other partner then simultaneously buys it back. And these are variously known as sort of bed and spouse type schemes. But the thing is, you've got to do that through a third party. Because remember, if you do it direct from one spouse to another, then you're simply covered by the spousal exemption that exists for CGT and you haven't achieved anything. So you've actually got to let them go. And this is classically done through a stockbroker or a bank. So asset transfers there are effective if you actually let go of them with a simultaneous buyback. So bed and spousing, don't forget, that's quite a good one. There is actually a variant on the bed and spouse scheme by which instead of flipping assets via a stockbroker into your partner's asset base, you can actually flip them into an ISA. So you are selling assets to create a gain, but then they're bought back inside the ISA rather than by your spouse or civil partner. And the tax on that's quite good, but again, you're going to need some specialist advice from somebody who's FSA registered, and that could be quite valuable. Okay, well, there's some obvious CGT points here. I think we mentioned earlier investing through an enterprise investment scheme. And that's, remember, has got a partner called the VCT, the Venture Capital Trusts. And both of these are investing in EISs and investing in VCTs offer, from both an income tax and a capital gains tax, some quite exciting possibilities. The principal difference between them being that if you invest through EIS, the Enterprise Investment Scheme, you individually are making an investment in one company. And therefore, the issue is risk, that if that one company goes down, then you've potentially lost your money. Contrast this. If you invest in a VCT, a venture capital trust, you get the tax breaks as an investor, but you're investing in a range of small companies via this beastie, the VCT. And therefore, of course, back to the good old risk, you are effectively spreading your risk. So it all depends on how risk averse you are. If you're looking for something you think has got some real potential and you are prepared to take risk on that, then the EIS is for you. But if you're a bit more risk averse, and most people indeed are, then investing in a VCT is pretty good too. Okay, as we go on down towards the end of this Tax Tips for High Net Worths podcast, let's have a look at another couple of angles. What about your pension? Well, there are some issues on pensions. They've obviously had a little bit of a bad press over the last few years. But one way that you can actually lower your tax bill is to lower your taxable income. Now, you can do that, of course, by paying more into your pension. So if you were to put, say, £4,000 of a £44,000 wage into a pension scheme, you're obviously going to reduce your 44 to 40, and that's just going to bring you below the threshold at which you start paying a higher rate tax, which is just under 44,000. So those numbers chosen, obviously, with a bit of care, because they put us just above, and then with the payment into the pension, just below the basic rate, higher rate boundary. But of course, it allows you to boost your retirement fund, and you get the tax breaks on them as well. So if you're a believer in pensions, then that's got to be something that's worth considering. The other tip that I think we'll just end on here is dealing with SIPs, the self-invested pension funds. And of course, the advantage of that is that it allows you to take fairly much complete control of your retirement planning. You choose the investments rather than somebody else chooses the investments. And I always think that the SIP is particularly good when you've got a trading company that's got its own premises, and where you could have the premises either held personally by the entrepreneur or within a SIP. Now, that's a specialist area. It's one that I'm certainly not qualified to give advice on, but I certainly know that that is worth pursuing in the right circumstances. Right, well, there you go, folks. There's just a few tips for high net worths. I will be coming back to trusts a little bit later this year. It's something that we as AAT members are occasionally called upon to advise on. Certainly in my client profile, I've got two or three people that I give this sort of advice to, and we have regular conversations on. And I hope that's been some use. I look forward to talking to you soon. Cheerio.